As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on. There it goes. Deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Call his wife in.
Hey, 405, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I got you for one more hour until the warm-up show at 5-888-808-1019. We started with the Knicks. It is game day. Game two tonight against the Pistons, 7:30 at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, where we saw an incredible fourth quarter run, a 21-0 run that took the Knicks from down, what was it, 8 or 9 points into a impressive fourth quarter win. But to me, I think tonight is a very pivotal game. I talked about it in the open. As much as I was impressed with everything about the Knicks, really, I mean, I thought Karl-Anthony Towns played tough. We talked about the physical nature the Pistons were going to bring. I thought the Knicks were there for it. I thought OG Anunoby early on with his offensive game, hitting threes, getting to the basket. He even hit a fadeaway jump shot at the top of the key. Offensively early on from him, covering up for a Jalen Brunson who really didn't have a shot early on. Karl-Anthony Towns and his physical nature, blocking shots, protecting the rim, him and Mitch Robinson, who were, you know, was really good, a couple of big-time steals. So defensively, I thought they played fairly well in the first half, other than giving up too many damn wide-open threes. But as great as that run was, and as much as I loved the rotation of Tibbs and obviously how important the three-point shooting from Campaign was at that moment, and leaving Bridges on the bench and letting Campaign play for as long as he did and have all those big shots. And we saw a little bit of a deeper rotation than we even thought. A lot of things to like. I still think that 21-0 run was more about the failings of the Pistons to meet the moment. They played that physical nature of basketball. They hit their open threes early on. You know, Beasley and Hardaway Jr. really came through early on in the game, and they were getting what they wanted. They were doing what they wanted. They were getting to the basket. They were hitting their open threes. They were kind of playing the game that the Knicks fans that I feared would be the kind of game and the kind of series that would give the Knicks a hell of a lot more problems than we expected, and so much talk about heading in and whether or not, if this is even, you know, a close series, what does that mean for this team? What does it mean for this coach who's, you know, immediately under fire here in the postseason? Because that's how the NBA works. And for a lot of the game, it was that, until the ball started rolling against them and the Pistons just folded. And as well as the Knicks were in that moment, as many open looks as they got, as many layups as they got, as many times as, you know, Brunson and Hart and even Karl-Anthony Towns hits that big three, was hitting these off-balance shots to keep them in the game at one point. You know, as much as that run exploded and showed you what this Knicks team can be capable of, even in a 5 or 6 minute span, to me it felt a hell of a lot more like the Pistons just not being there for the moment and not being able to rise to the moment. That's what it felt like. It felt like a young, inexperienced team that we talked about, the physical nature, their confidence. You know, Cunningham didn't even have a great game, and they were able to get what they wanted early on, and then they just folded. And I think we're going to find out tonight what kind of series this is going to be, because I do think if they can respond, if the Pistons can get over it, like, it depends on what happens in this game. Because that's going to be, the Knicks are talented enough and have enough offensive weapons. Even, you know, even Bridges, who, you know, didn't have a great game and has had his struggles all year, his efficiency in the mid-range game, like, it feels like at any moment that the Knicks really need a basket, you can get a mid-range jump shot from Mikal Bridges and he doesn't miss it. So, like, there's enough offensive firepower, even when they're not going well, to go on a run. Like, the Knicks are going to go on a run at some point in this game, too. And the Piston team that shows up, to me, I think we're going to find out whether or not this is going to be a quick series or whether or not the Knicks are in for a dogfight. Like, I do think there is a scenario where that same situation happens again, fourth quarter, tight game, Knicks go on a run, and the Pistons respond and learn from game one and bounce back and don't be overcome with inexperience and don't be overcome by the moment and bounce back and fight back. And if that's the case, and if the Pistons can take this game, I think they're in for a long series. And if the same thing happens and the Pistons just aren't capable of hanging around in the fourth and don't respond to the run and look like they did at times during that fourth quarter, then I think it'll be a quick series. I think that's the kind of, I still think the Knicks will win the series. I'm not overly concerned about losing the series, but I think we're going to find out tonight what kind of series it's going to be. I think there's a chance it's a quick one. I think there's a chance it's a dogfight, depending on how the Pistons respond, because I think we understand who the Knicks are going to be. Hopefully, you know, Jalen Brunson's ankle, who he tweaked it a little bit, should be fine. I think Karl-Anthony Towns in this series isn't going to have a real problem. We'll see what happens if and when they get to Boston. I think OG Anunoby, I thought that was a big question mark on whether or not OG can be the offensive player he was while Brunson was gone. And at least game one, at least the first half of game one, he was that guy for them. I do think, you know, the bench is good enough. This team is good enough. The experience is good enough. The offensive prowess is good enough. The defense from OG Anunoby and Towns and Mitchell defending the rim against this team is good enough where I expect them to win. But I do think there's a chance that the Pistons just aren't ready for the moment. And I think we're going to find that out tonight, 7:30 Madison Square Garden. We'll see who shows up. 888-808-1019. Then the two, obviously, baseball. The Aaron Judge home run. Everyone's all upset about the Aaron Judge home run. We got the greatest quote. One more time, Fleegs. The greatest quote from Aaron Boone I've ever heard in my life. After being, this is his moment as Yankee manager. I don't know what it is. I love this phrasing from Boone after watching the replay of the Judge home run that absolutely should have been a home run, called foul. And when it was reviewed by MLB at their facility and still called a foul ball, Aaron Boone obviously then gets thrown out after the strike three pitch to Judge after the foul home run. And what he said about the home run in the postgame is my new favorite moment from Aaron Boone as the Yankee manager.
The audacity of the call standing is remarkable.
The audacity of the call standing is remarkable. That is the best line of Aaron Boone's, what, 8 year, 7 year, 10 year as New York Yankee manager. I love it. I love it so much. I could listen to it all day. And then we got to get to Max Fried, because we could talk about the no-hitter. And yeah, I'm annoyed that any sort of, you know, person would interject themselves into the game, that the scorekeeper would interject himself into this game. If you didn't see it, if you haven't heard, obviously Max Fried, who is the ace of this staff, and that's really the talking point. In fact, let me just go there for a second. Max Fried, who has now lowered his ERA to like 1.6, he has been incredible for this team. And coming off the loss that they had on Saturday afternoon, and I was in my car driving home from vacation, pounding the steering wheel in frustration as Devin Williams, who I still believe in, We've had our Devin Williams conversations. You're free to call me about it at 888-808-1019. It's been 3 weeks. I'm frustrated. He's been awful, but his track record is being one of the best closers in baseball, not just a fairly good one, but a brilliant one. And I fully expect him to be fine this year, but is off to a miserable start, blows a 4-run lead on Saturday. Yankees are up 8-4. They lose 10-8 in extra innings. Coming off of that loss, they needed a big-time pitching performance because you do not want to win the first two games of that series, lose that one after having it wrapped up with a 4-run lead in the ninth, and then only coming out of Tampa with a split and a 2-game losing streak. And Max Fried throws an absolute gem. He got his fastball up to 98 miles an hour. He has stopped losing streaks. He has continued winning streaks. That was a big game early on, as much as an early on game like this can be. They had a 6-game winning streak. They blew it. And he bounced. He helped this team bounce back, gave them the unbelievable pitching performance. He has been the ace of this staff. And I know as we talk so much this morning about the Mets pitching staff and what they're doing, and they don't give big-time contracts to top pitchers that are over 30 years old. They don't deem it worthy. And clearly for them, it is working. I am pretty damn happy as a Yankee fan that Max Fried is a New York Yankee. And since the injury to Cole, where this rotation would be without him, as they are reintroducing Clark Schmidt to the rotation, who had a decent start against the Royals earlier in the week. Max Fried is so important to them, what they do, and what he's been able to give them over the first month of this season, and yesterday in particular, was great, and he gave them 7, or at least we thought 7, no-hit innings, as the official scorer made one of the dumbest decisions we've ever seen. If you haven't seen it, because it's it was Easter Sunday, maybe you weren't watching. Max Fried had a no-hitter into the sixth inning. The new, young, extremely fast prospect called up by Tampa Bay hits a ground ball to the first baseman, Goldschmidt. He bobbles it, doesn't make the play. It's clear as day Max Fried would not have gotten over in time, that the play would not have been made, and it should have been called a hit. It was not. It was called an error. Max Fried gets through the rest of the sixth. Max Fried gets through the seventh. He's got a no-hitter coming out for the eighth. And again, this is what bothers me, because it's Easter Sunday. I'm with my family, and I'm taking time out from being with my family because I think I'm watching a no-hitter. And I'm expecting, as they go to break at the end of the through six through seven and a half, going through to the bottom of the eighth inning, I'm expecting Max Fried to be on the mound attempting to get 6 more outs for a no-hitter. And I'm expecting to be annoyed about pitch count and whether or not Boone is going to let him go and whether or not he's going to be able to get this no-hitter. But instead, as they get back from commercial break, Michael Kay is screaming about the fact that he has a hit and that the official scorer gave him one and changed that error in the sixth inning into a base hit. So mid-inning, while we were in commercial break, while I'm taking time away from playing wiffle ball with my kids so I can watch a no-hitter attempt, I'm trying to get Tommy in the house, come on, it's a no-hitter, let's watch it and see what's up. Halfway through the inning, they decide, the official scorer, 2 innings later, to change it. And you know how it's bad? Because I agree with them and I'm pissed off. If I agree with you and I'm still annoyed, you made a massive mistake. And to inject himself into that situation was ridiculous. But to me, he ends up giving up a base hit to the first hitter of the eighth inning. Thankfully, otherwise it would have been a major issue. Major League Baseball continues to do stupid things. But the Yankees get 2 egregious calls against them. It doesn't matter. They win anyway. And for me, the story is this team now is playing much better. The offense has been better in the warmth of Tampa as opposed to the frigid nature of New York and Detroit. And the pitching has gotten a little bit under control. Clark Schmidt came in and pitched well. Max Fried has continued to pitch well. Cookie Carrasco hasn't been great, but he's been far better than he was in that terrible outing in Detroit. And they've settled in. They're getting healthier. They're getting better. Judge is the best hitter on the planet. And they come away winning the last 6 of the last 7 games as well. We talk about the Mets and how incredible their pitching staff is. So we got baseball on the table. I talked a lot about Juan Soto and what happened last week because I wasn't here and all the noise around Juan Soto, which is always fun. So all of that on the table, 888-808-1019, as well as the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. And the Giants better find a quarterback in the first two rounds. 888-808-1019. Let's get to Bob in New London, Connecticut. What's up, Bob? Bobby! Bob! That's it, Bob. Maury in Belmore. Tonight is your night, bro.
Tonight is your night, bro. How What's you doing, up? Brother?
Good. How are you, man?
Great trip. Have a good
it
trip
was a great. Boys. It was. It was a great trip with the boys. Yes, we had. It was a great. We stopped. We bunch of stops. We split the trip up into like five or six parts. We were in Myrtle Beach. We were in Naples. We were in Disney. It was fun.
That's good. That's good. Disney, a couple of days.
Just one, actually. And we didn't even go to a park. We just, you know, stayed at a hotel, went to the boardwalk, rode the Skyliner just to do something different and split, give me a couple of hours off the drive from Naples.
Yep. It's only $4,000 for that, anyway.
For one night? Yeah, I know. You ain't.
You're not too off. It's crazy. All right, I want to start with the Knickies. The fact that I love that we won, I love that we went on a run like that. But those open threes in the third. Too many open threes.
Wow. I mean, and
too many. Right?
Yeah. No, I mean, what's his name? Beasley was killing them with him for a while. Then Hardaway Jr. hit like way too many open threes. But to me, you could see it on the court. Like, again, I want to praise the Knicks because I do think they did a lot of good things.
Yep.
But I still think that was more about the Pistons folding. You could see Beasley.
Correct.
Who is like trying to get their heads together. He was trying to rally the troops. He's like, you know, come back. Like, it just felt like they were folding in the moment. And I'm concerned that too many things were going well for the Pistons. And if they can find themselves and learn from that moment, if they can have a rally in game two and tell themselves, hey, we fell apart. They didn't beat us game one. We beat ourselves game one. And if they can change that for game two, I'm not overly worried about the Knicks losing the series. I guess on some level, if they lose, I'll start to be a little concerned. But I would tell you that I think it's going to be a hard fought series. If they win game two, I think it's a hard fought series.
Yeah, and I think if you noticed, obviously Brunson's shot was off. It was short.
He was two for 13. He was short on everything. Yeah, and then he found it. And then he tweaked the ankle and actually came back better with a new pair of shoes. But
we got Josh Hart was quiet in game one. Hopefully he'll tune up in game two. So I think we got a good mixture. I think OG looks great. I'm excited. But again, one game at a time. I think that if you look around, that Detroit team, that team's got a future because everyone looks like they're 15 years old on the team.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a couple of rookie starters as well that came off the bench. So I don't know. We'll see. But I'm excited. And then with the Giants, I don't know. It seems to be more and more like we'll pick the defense.
No question.
I think is great.
Yeah, I mean, I want the quarterback. If they don't think Shedeur Sanders is worthy of a third pick, I'm not gonna tell them that I know more than them. Like, that's part of the reason I want them to get a quarterback is because I believe in the coach dealing with quarterbacks after what he did with Josh Allen, and he turned Tommy DeVito into a name that we know and that the GM actually has the audacity to talk about being comfortable with him being part of the quarterback room. He won games against a playoff team. He beat the Green Bay Packers while they were playing well 2 years ago with Tommy DeVito. So I would love to see what he would do with an actual quarterback prospect and an actual, you know, future quarterback of this team. But if they don't like him at three, I can't scream about it. I don't want to trade the pick. I do want to take one of the two best players in this draft. If, you know, whichever one the Browns don't take, I am on board for that. But I think they're being a little cavalier with the idea they don't need a quarterback. And to me, you want to do whatever you want to do, number three, that's fine. You better hope a quarterback is there for that second pick. And if Jackson Dart is there and they don't take him, I'll be pissed. And for me, I'm trying to move into this first round. I need a quarterback in the first two rounds. Need one. I don't know how the Giants could say they don't. I just don't know how they could say they don't. So we'll see what they do, but to me, if I like Shedeur Sanders at almost at all, like if I really think Shedeur Sanders has a chance to be a damn good starter in this league, I'm taking him. That's it. Even if I don't think he could be a superstar, even if I don't think he can carry a team all by himself, like if I just think he could be a starter in this league and be a pretty damn good quarterback, I would take him. Mike in Bayside. What's up, Mike?
Hey, good morning. Just to piggyback on that other, on the Knicks.
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting that the second game the spread is only 6.5. Mm-hmm. You know, the spread was 7.5 first game, so now they're kind of the experts are maybe giving them a chance, and And maybe, like, if the spread was, like, 10 or 11, I'd say, wow, the Knicks are just going to roll them and sweep the series. And also, I want to make a point about Max Fried. That's really why I called. Mm-hmm. Like, that with Michael Kay, I was agreeing with him, and the same exact thing was happening at our house. We had the Met game on upstairs. Downstairs, I'm, like, gathering some people. I'm like, there's a no-hitter. Let's go down there.
Yeah.
And we had the game on down there. And you're making Max Fried go to 90, 100 pitches because he thinks he has a no-hitter. That's, like, Bush League stuff. I don't agree with it at all. Well, and also, I want to tell AC something. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. What's your last point?
Now, my last point is, like, the Pope just died, and I'm sad about it, and I'm wondering. I thought it was cool. I think you were working on the show the way Mike Francesa used to, like, track the new Pope, and I doubt that these days we're going to be doing that on WFAN anymore, but that was fun.
No, that was, I was, Fleegman asked if that was before me. No, I was on with Mike. I didn't hear that the Pope passed away. I knew he was ill.
Oh, yeah, CNN had 20 minutes ago.
Oh, geez. I did not hear that. So, yeah, I'm just seeing that now. CNN had it 20 minutes ago?
Yeah, it's AP News 20, yeah, Reuters, everybody confirming it.
But yeah, that's terrible. I knew he was ill. I thought he got better. But we're gonna have the conclave. And yes, I was on that day with Mike, and those were always, you know, that's Mike and when I never worked with Mike and Chris. I think I was on the board for like maybe one or two shifts back in 07, but I didn't really. I worked with Mike. And some of those shows where it was counter-programming was some of the best shows, some of the most fun shows. And I do remember when Mike was following it, and we were waiting for the smoke, and he was talking about it, and he was talking about some of the candidates, and he was getting into it. Yes, I do remember that. I was on that show. I was definitely running the board when we had when he was following the conclave, and we were waiting for the black smoke and all that, but I did not hear that. That's just breaking now. If you haven't heard, I guess the Pope has passed away. Again, I knew someone just sent me a story that he was out and about doing something. But Pope Francis dies on Easter Monday, April 21st, at the age of 88. Yeah, the Vatican has announced it 23 minutes ago. Now, I forget, do they, very sad to hear, do they?
He made a public appearance on Easter.
That's what I thought. Someone just sent me that he was like washing like feet at like an event. He was like doing something and he was out and he was like making an appearance. Someone sent me the story. Yeah, I mean, I guess the Pope has passed away at 88 after a brief, after a long respiratory crisis. Because I remember he was sick, like 2 weeks ago, where he was really ill, and we thought that it could happen at any moment, but I thought he pulled through, and then again, he was doing an event yesterday, I thought.
And he met with Vice President Vance yesterday.
And he met with the vice president yesterday. So, yeah, I mean, I thought he was doing better. He was making personal appearances. But unfortunately, he has passed away. Rest in peace to Pope Francis. And I think they, like, immediately begin the process. If I remember correctly, I think, like, it's almost immediately where they're going to start the conclave. Yeah.
Maybe if you watch that movie that was up for the Oscars,
you'll learn. I don't know. Apparently, it didn't paint the Catholic Church or the process in the best of light. I don't know how many people are fond of that movie, but I don't
you
have.
Honestly, if you really want to know the process, if you text Mike in the morning, he probably knows.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I wish I had as much knowledge about it as Mike did during that story. Mike was able to bring a lot to it. I'm not sure how much I can bring to it. I do believe it happens almost immediately. They begin the process of the conclave, and the process of building, process of electing a new pope, and they all locked themselves into the room. I remember it more from the Da Vinci Code, or the second movie, the Da Vinci Code, than I do the Conclave movie. But that will start, and listen, if you don't, I'm going to be locked into the Francesa podcast. There's no doubt. I'm sure he will break it down.
When that happened in 2013,
yeah,
I was still starting in school, yeah. And like me and a couple other people who were from New York, we were paying attention and I guess streaming the show in the computer labs that I worked in as an attendant.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the same building as the radio station, and we got a lot of other people, like people from Pennsylvania, who I think the only other time they heard of Mike was the thing Falling Asleep with Sweeney, but they were like, we had dozens of people in central Pennsylvania locked in.
No, he was
listening to Mike.
Yeah, he was locked in. I definitely remember those shows. He was, I think it was more than one too. I think it took a couple days, as it does. It's a long process, and everybody stands outside the Vatican and you wait for they send up the white smoke every once in a while, let you know the vote hasn't been successful or conclusive, and you're waiting for the black smoke and the announcement of the new pope. And I remember, Mike was locked in. Mike was all about it. We did a couple of shows where that was like a running, he would check in every so often, talk about it. He went through a lot of the different cardinals that are up for the position, because it is a unique situation. And they'll start to go through all the different popes that are the cardinals that are favorites and everything to take over as the new pope. And I guess that was 2013. I think but that wasn't the most recent. He hasn't been the pope for that long, has he?
That I don't know. The one with Mike was March of 2013.
Yeah, I think it might have been the pope prior to Pope Francis. But if you're just turning in, Pope Francis has passed away at the age of 88 on Easter Monday, after making a personal appearance yesterday and speaking with Vice President J.D. Vance.
Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite teams here on The Fan.
All right, 4:35, McMonagle here with you on this Monday morning. I was wrong about a couple of things, which is not uncommon. If you haven't heard, if I'm breaking the news to you, sorry to say that at the age of 88, Pope Francis has passed away this morning. It was, he did take over in 2013, so we were talking about how I was on the board for Mike and how involved he was in the reporting the conclave and following it and talking about it. That was 2013 when Pope Francis ended up becoming pope. And it is the reverse of what I said, which I think I knew. I think I just said it reverse, but either way, I'm wrong. It is black smoke indicates that they have not had a successful vote. And the white smoke means that a new pope has been elected. But I got to look into when they started. I think it's almost like immediate. I think they very quickly, they gather up everyone from, I mean, not like immediate, like within the next few minutes, but like, I think they, not typically, I don't want to get into, I don't want to try and be Mike, but I'm trying to think of like, now obviously because it's cardinals from around the world, but sometimes the Pope is ill and they travel to the Vatican, waiting or in, under the idea that it could be any minute. I don't know how, it said he was dealing with a long-term respiratory illness. He was out doing things. He met with the vice president yesterday for Easter. So I don't think it was expected. He had a very severe bout with a respiratory illness a few weeks ago that people were concerned for his health, but I thought that had passed, but unfortunately it did not. And Pope Francis has passed away at the age of 88. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls, though. Paul in Buffalo. What's up, Paul?
Good evening, Chris. There are certain things that just make you stop, no matter what you're thinking of and what you're doing. And
yep.
The death of the pontiff is one. And,
yes.
And Pope Francis, this is an interesting time if you're Catholic. It has been for a while. We had two popes at one time for a moment. And Pope Francis himself was the first Jesuit pope in 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
I myself was educated by Jesuits at the Canisius College here in Buffalo. They are the most intellectual of any Catholics, I would say. They fought the Counter-Reformation. And I would suggest no one living today will see the next Jesuit Pope. It will be another long time before that happens. But it is always a world-shaking event when a Pope falls.
Yeah.
I don't believe the College of Cardinals is in session right now, but surely people knew the health of the Pope was faltering, so I'm sure most of the Cardinals are there anyway. I guess moving on to smaller, more mundane things. If the call was made correctly, and, you know, bear in mind it's Easter and I was cooking, so I didn't watch, and you say the call was correct, then I think an error is an error. Max Fried probably doesn't want a Fugazi no-hitter.
I don't think it was so egregious that it was Fugazi. It was called an error for two innings, like, and nobody had a real issue with it. I do think it should have been called a hit. I don't disagree with the final call. I just think there are times that you can't insert yourself into history. You called it an error. He's been pitching under. So at what point?
Are you okay
with it at any point? Like, say he throws the no-hitter, they celebrate it on the field, and then tomorrow they change it to a one-hitter.
All right, that's the game has ended. I mean, I guess I would say there's maybe a five-minute span, but I would think that would be even way worse. What's egregious to me is when a perfect game was ruined by a bad call at first base.
Yeah, I don't disagree that that would be more that's more egregious, and that if I were Galarraga,
and I mean it was the last out of the game.
Correct. If I were
and that ump, I mean now that ump should have been canned, and everyone clapped their hands for him and had a big cry for him instead.
I disagree with you there. I am more upset with this official scorer than I am the umpire.
It's 6-1, half a dozen to the other.
Well,
there.
Listen, I think that. Andres Galarraga, who was the pitcher that day, has a much more obvious beef. That's the last play of the game. He did accomplish it, and it was taken away by a bad call. I would be more upset if I were him than Max Fried, who, you know, ended up giving up a hit anyway. He still had to get six more outs with the pitch count at 94 or whatever it was. Like, yeah, no doubt that's more of an egregious thing, but bad calls from a human umpire happen. He made a mistake, right? He made a mistake. This is an official scorer who made a mistake and called it an error. And then two innings later, in the middle of a no-hitter, decided to end the no-hitter. He injected himself into history. Once you call it an error, leave it. Leave it. And then once he gives up the base hit, you want to change it to a hit, fine. But you can't end. This is, it's still an entertainment. It's still sport. You just ruined a chance at history. You can't do that. I know so did Jim Joyce, the first base umpire in that game. But that was an honest-to-God mistake. He thought he saw out. Safe. He thought he saw safe. It was an egregious call. He was dead wrong, and he felt terrible about it. But that's a mistake, and you can't change it. This is a mistake. Oh, let me think on it. Let me rewatch that. And then change it to a hit in the middle of a no-hitter in the eighth inning. This is not like, I could even see it if it happened in the first and then in the third you change it. He's through seven innings. You can't go back and revisit it. I wouldn't even look at it again. Like, I'm not even looking at that play again to change my mind until another hit is given up. I'm not even looking at it. So, yes, I do understand the idea, and I don't have a problem. The actual call on the field should have been, from the jump, a base hit. I believe it to be a base hit. Watching the play, I believe it to be a base hit. It should be a base hit. Now, official scoring in general, we talk about bad officiating and bad umpiring in all of sports and baseball. Official scoring for baseball has become an absolute farce. I have no idea why they are so terrible at it. It happens all the time. I mean, it feels like anything hit hard is a base hit. It could be right through the legs of a third baseman. They're going to call it a base hit if it had an exit velocity of 100. Like, they have, it has been, it's mind-bogglingly bad. These official scores, it happens once or twice a game. And yes, you're right. It's coming from someone who scores a lot of games. I'm bitter. Because I work in Penn, But, like, you can't go back and change it there. What if he, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you could say it's the right call. And first of all, it wouldn't have been Fugazi at all. If he threw that no-hitter, I don't even think anybody would have questioned it. Nobody would have went back and really looked at that play and said, oh, it should have been a hit. I know that happened with Santana with the Mets. That's fair or foul. That's different. That's got an obvious hit the white line was foul, and clearly it was a fair ball. That's a different thing. This is subjective. No one would have went back and said, oh, that should have been a hit. I feel awkward about this. Not at all. That would have been an easy no-hitter. Nobody would have said a damn word if he were able to accomplish it. And to me, that's where the timing of it is terrible. And if you say, hey, a hit's a hit, an error's an error, as long as they got the call right, at what point would you have been okay with it? If he would have done it two outs into the ninth inning, you okay? Max Fried comes out, gets through the eighth, gets the first two outs of the ninth inning. We are one out away, and suddenly the official score goes, actually, that error in the sixth, I'm changing it to a base hit. I mean, to me, past the seventh is deep enough where you don't even mess with it. Now, ultimately, it becomes a non-story because he gives up a base hit, but it sucks. And who knows? You'll never know, right? I'm sure he was notified. He knew. Maybe he doesn't make that pitch. Maybe it's different if it's a no-hitter. I don't know. But if it's still being classified as a no-hitter. But that is someone injecting themselves into the game when it had no business and no reason to. To me, I have a far more bigger problem with this official scorer than I do Jim Joyce, even though he was dead wrong and cost someone an actual perfect game. The perfect game was completed. He got all 27 outs, and the umpire cost him that. As bad as that was, the situation is far worse. But the umpire just made an honest-to-God mistake. This is a guy deciding mid-inning to end a no-hitter. I have a far bigger problem with this official scorer than I do Jim Joyce, the umpire, and the failed Galarraga perfect game. Far more of a problem. That's a mistake. This is someone choosing to end a no-hitter.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Diaz on the first base side of the rubber. Rests the glove on his left thigh. Looks into Alvarez. Diaz still staring in. Come set. The 1-2 pitch. Swung out and missed strike three. Put it in the books. And to the New York Mets, California, here we come.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:51, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. It is now Monday morning, game night. There is nothing, I mean, listen, I had to watch it, unfortunately, at 2 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't go to sleep. That's how, you know, I wouldn't listen to it in the car. I can't do that with a Nick playoff game. I was in the car with the boys driving back. I got all, you know, I was annoyed listening to the end of the Yankee game as obviously Devin Williams blew a 4-run lead. And we talked about Devin Williams. I'm not getting ready. He's still the closer of the New York Yankees. Crazy overreaction to Devin Williams. He'll be fine. He's not just some guy. He is arguably the best closer in baseball and has been for 4 years. It's a brutal start as a New York Yankee. There have been many a brutal start to great players' Yankee careers. Guys that you love. It happens. I'm frustrated by it. I was so annoyed. That moment in the car, I can't even tell you. I know the Nick game. I can't remember if it was the Nick game was about to start, but I know if it was already started by the time that game ended. Oh, yeah, the game started at 4 o'clock, right? So, yeah. I know the Nick game's going on. I don't want to listen to it. I'm going to wait till I get home. The kids are in the back trying to watch. I turn my phone. You can turn your phone into a hotspot, a Wi-Fi hotspot. So I turn my phone into a Wi-Fi hotspot. And I have their tablets in the back, and they're trying to watch WrestleMania on Peacock in their tablets. Devin Williams is blowing a freaking 4-run lead in the eighth to end a Yankee winning streak. Freaking
leaving runner at third base. Grisham gets a base hit. By the way, Grisham, how great has he been? We'll have plenty of time all week to talk more Yankees. Grisham gets a base hit, first and third, nobody out in the top of the 10th, and Bellinger and Cabrera, strikeout, fly ball to end the inning with a Scara. I know exactly how the rest of that game is going to go. I'm furious about that. I know I can't watch the Knicks until later, and I got the kids screaming about the buffering that's taking place on their tablets trying to watch the WrestleMania pre-show. I'm like, it's not even the WrestleMania yet! We got bad service. I don't even know where we are right now. Because the traffic is so bad, they diverted us to some stinking road that I'd never been on before. What state are we in? Confusion. Anger. So I had to wait until I got home, and then eventually we had to just put it on my phone. The Wi-Fi wasn't working, so we just had to use my cell service on my phone. They had to watch. That's how they watched Saturday Night WrestleMania, a little phone in the back. And then I got home at 2 o'clock, and I watched the Knicks. Stayed up till fast forwarding. It took me like an hour and a half or so. I was up till maybe 3:15, 3:30. Watching the Knicks Saturday night. Had to wake up early for Easter mass and breakfast and all that good stuff. So as much as I had a relaxing week of just laying around the beach in the pool, kind of on no sleep at the moment, but I'll live. I'm used to it. But even on delay, and I'm good at that. A lot of people aren't. Me and Evan both have this ability. A lot of people don't want to do it. I am, without question, even with fast-forwarding through commercials, I have the ability to fool myself. I started that game at 2 o'clock. I'm into it. I turn it on. I can pretend very easily that I'm watching something live. I don't have the urge to fast-forward through everything. I can just fast-forward through the commercials. I completely trick myself into thinking I'm watching live. I watch baseball games on delay. I pace. I was frustrated down 9 points in the fourth quarter. I'm like, they're going to freaking lose this stupid game. Like, then they go on that run in the fourth quarter, and the Garden was just electric. And hopefully tonight, more of the same. Although, I'm telling you, I'm not, like, overly concerned. But that was a game that I think there's a lot to be concerned about, to be totally honest with you. I know that run was great and all. I put most of that on the Pistons absolutely collapsing. I mean, they couldn't hit a shot. They went ice cold from behind the arc after being on fire to start the game and having more open looks than you could possibly. Like, the Knicks did a pretty good job being physical with them. The Knicks did a pretty good job defending the rim. I thought Cat and Mitch on the court at the same time actually worked pretty well. I thought the rotation from the coach was pretty good. I thought the bench minutes were good. I thought we saw OG Anunoby's offense, which was a concern for me, keeping his offensive game plan and what he's become since the Brunson injury as a part of this team moving forward was going to be important, and we saw that early on in the game. Like, there was a lot of positives, but at the same time, the Pistons were pulling away. The Pistons were getting way too many open threes. I didn't like a lot of what I was seeing. Josh Hart was pretty much non-existent. And how many loose balls went through Josh Hart's hands? At least 4 or 5. Right? They had that one sequence where, I think it's obviously before the run, the Pistons get a breakaway and miss the dunk. And the outlet pass off, I forget who gets the rebound, but the outlet passes to Hart, and it goes right through his hand. They had an opportunity. Like, they ended up capitalizing, obviously, and going on a run, but just a lot was going wrong up until that moment, and then the Pistons didn't know how to handle being up late in the game. They didn't know how to handle playing in that kind of game, in that kind of atmosphere, with the lead, and watching it slowly slip away, and watching a 9-point game become a 3-point game, become a 2-point game. They couldn't handle it. And I think that is much more the story of this game than the Knicks going on some great run and overcoming adversity and eventually showing up and taking over the game. I really think that's more about the Pistons. And how they react and how they learn from that is going to determine how the rest of the series goes. And I don't want to be in a hard-fought series with the Pistons. I want this to kind of be over pretty easily, pretty quickly, and move on to Boston, who's going to be damn near impossible to beat, but it's going to be even more so if this team, we've already seen, you know, Jalen Brunson kind of tweak his ankle. I don't need some six, we don't need some six, seven game series to take down the Pistons before taking on the Celtics, who probably are going to be sitting there waiting for them. So we'll have plenty of that. We'll react. Oh, there's the music. Perfect. We'll react to game two tomorrow, 2 a.m. We'll have more baseball as both teams look to stay hot. Mets coming off the four-game sweep, take on the Phillies. And the Yankees manage off a great effort from Max Fried to take three out of four from Tampa in first place. Both teams in first place. So we'll react to that. We'll get closer to the NFL draft. All of it happening. Big week here on The Fan. Stay tuned all day long here on The Fan. The warm-up show is next. Thank you to Fleegs. Thank you guys for having me back. It's good to be back. I'm glad to be back. Until the next vacation, I'm here. So we'll catch you tomorrow, 2 a.m. Everybody enjoy the rest of your Monday. I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.